Welcome to TTLG. Georgi, how are you today, sir?
Doing great. How's it going?
It's going well. Going well. All right. So we've got a brief episode today, but there's some hot action in Anchor. The whales are betting in Terra. So we want to track that and give you some details around that. And we've got a couple of other tidbits that we want to throw into the episode today. Quickly, before we get started, please remember, nothing on this episode of this channel is meant to be taken as investment advice. The rest is in the disclaimer below. Give it a read. Go find an investment professional. That's not us. So, Georgi, Anchor. We saw Anchor rip. We've seen Anchor pull back a bit. And now it sounds like the ANC-UST pair is going to be removed from ANC. Is that right?
Yeah. So first, the price action. I mean, Anchor was like a 1.3 billion in market cap at some point. Now it's pulled back, and the pullback was very sharp. So let me see if I can show my screen.
Yeah, I think I need to hang on. Just a second. There you go.
Yeah, the Anchor. Anchor pullback was very sharp. So I'm just going to pick up the CoinHole chart here. And I was surprised. We've expressed tons of bullish views on Anchor here. And we expected a lot of price stability. Instead, after this pump, which came on the news of the Anchor reserve replenishment, Anchor listing on Binance, a bunch of other positive news, we saw a sharp pullback. And I mean, we saw some selling that we posted about, and that was just quite impressive. I can't tell if this was a specific account associated with a VC or an individual, but you can see that individual dumping massive amounts of Anchor, and that kind of selling behavior of whales contributed to the price drop. Now that became a little bit clearer with the realization, which I am at fault that I was not keeping up with some of the dates, and Anchor launched in March last year. So Anchor's tokenomics, Danku brought it up and others on Twitter, that basically the LP incentives are going to stop 2 days from now on March 17th. And that's been planned all along. And the initial incentives were to help with liquidity on other exchanges, but Anchor is very liquid. It has a large cap. It doesn't need this big liquidity pools, or maybe it does. It's just it doesn't need the incentives, and that was pre-planned. Now we all want those incentives, but unfortunately I think that will create some selling pressure on otherwise very, very strong product. And I think that contributed to the price dip, and obviously I am reconsidering my LP positions in Anchor. I have pulled them because I don't expect that once you remove the Anchor positions from Astroport, like, you will see these APRs drop significantly. And that's going to also impact the Anchor APR on Mars with the 2x leverage, or the auto compounding on Spectrum and Apollo. So all of those will be impacted, including, I think we've got on Anchor, we've got some 70 million on Ashford. We have another 200 million in worth of LPs. So we're watching that. There will be some selling pressure inevitably, but long term, it's an incredible product. It's got the backing of the entire Terra community. So we are very bullish, but we do expect a price volatility in the coming days.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is, my opinion on it is, like, you know, you've got to do certain things to bootstrap the community in the beginning. But it is I think important for people to remember that while traditional finance may not be the answer, being paid to borrow, right? Getting, 100% APR, that's just not real world economics. Now, I think it's not
sustainable.
No, it's not sustainable. And I think it could be argued that, you know, if you say, okay, sovereign individual, you're going to take the place of a bank, and now there's all this interesting activity that's happening on the network and you can be directly exposed to that, I completely understand why that might, you know, result in a higher return. And I think that makes a ton of sense. But in terms of these protocols offering, you know, the carrot on a stick, they're just not going to be able to do it, in perpetuity. So, you know, what I like about this is that, what I don't like about it is nobody likes, you know, opportunities to make a bunch of money going away. What I do like about it is they're very clear about this from the get-go. It's documented. They're sticking to the plan. And I think that that bodes well for the team. I'm with you. There's going to be some short-term pain here. My feeling on this, though, and I'd be interested in your opinion here. I mean, ANC really has been, pardon the pun, anchoring much of the Terra ecosystem so far. Do you see that continuing, or do you think that they're going to be displaced by other options?
Oh, definitely continuing. I mean, look at the total value locked, $15 billion UST. Notice this is bigger than the market cap of UST because that includes also the BE, the B asset, which is what about a billion now? And there will be other B assets. So no, I don't see that changing. I think Anchor is maturing and at the scale. The focus is keeping the 19.5% or like 20% APY on earn. And I think that is the goal. So I think the shift of value seekers should be towards that. And the fact that we've got the yield reserves supporting that, I think will be huge. Also, with the arrival of B assets, which can't come soon enough, I think the price will see a huge boost. I think that's going to be a huge telling sign. And then we'll see, again, the massive volumes that the volumes itself, like if you look at Terra Swap, which has a smaller anchor UST LP, and where the rewards are purely based on fees, we saw during the anchor bump up here, we saw the APR going over 100% because of the massive volume. So I think that's one way that we'll see the rewards for anchor on Astroport growing still. But I decided not to stay just because personally, I feel a little bit under pressure to make up for some of the losses, the liquidation with excessive collateral. I think selling that's putting pressure on me where I wanted to compound Anchor and grow it. And one can still do that. And Mars gives you now the 2x leverage with compounding. It's amazing. But I'm going to stay away from that for now until we see the price stabilizing and especially until we get the B assets. But once they come in, expect another big run up. So get in and stay in before that.
Yeah, I mean, I think now's not a bad time. Just looking at that chart is not a bad time to start dollar cost averaging over a, 30, 60 day time horizon. Something I wanted to mention real quickly that you just brought up. Can you go back to that other, the earn page there or the dashboard page there?
Yeah.
Okay. This is something really interesting. I don't know if it's really interesting, but it's just an observation that I want to make. So the market cap of UST is 14.8, right? 10.25 is in Anchor, right?
Yeah.
Which certainly seems to strongly suggest that Anchor is the first place that UST stops, right? Yeah. So I think in so long as we continue to see, you know, a really interesting ratio like that, I think Anchor's in pole position to continue to be the leading savings protocol. I think also I'd have to go look at the Lido numbers, but like, you know, I think Lido is pretty massive actually, but just in terms of like a place where collateral lives, right? If we go look at the Lido numbers, those are really big numbers. So why am I saying this? Well, if you look at the market cap of Ethereum, which I believe was Lido's first target ecosystem, yeah. and then you look at Solana and you look at Terra, and you just kind of see how that Lido story came together. Wow. Okay, it's smaller than I thought. It's actually much.
Yeah.
Smaller than I thought. So, but my point is, okay, wow, my statement still remains. But what I'm saying is, you look at Lido, you look at how Lido's kind of done this kind of multi-chain, you know, this multi-chain kind of perspective. And so to think about, or has executed against this multi-chain perspective. And so to think about something like Anchor making its way over to other blockchains, and we see that kind of interoperability start to scale in a really interesting way. I mean, yeah. Hell, we're already at $5 billion of collateral. Can you go back to that? I want to make sure I'm not misspeaking. Yeah. You're already at $5.3 billion in total collateral, right? Of which, how much is BETH? About a billion?
About a billion, yeah. 970.
Yeah, it's about $1 billion. So it's like, once, to your point, once we bring on BATOM, BSOL, you know, I think this is going to be some really, really, really interesting price action here. But I also think that it's going to continue to tell the story of Anchor as like a center, you know, a kind of cornerstone for savings and DeFi.
And Wrapped Bitcoin, that lives on mostly on Lido, has like 10 billion market cap itself. So, I mean, you bring any Bitcoin derivative to Anchor will be huge. So,
yeah. I mean, I think that's the thing that I'm really looking out for when we talk about, you know, the power of Luna Foundation Guard and their recent investments in Bitcoin. And then we say, and when these two assets are, you know, more technically linked at a deeper technical level, I think that's ultimately kind of the things that I'm referencing. So let's pivot a bit. These bets, Doquan's bets.
Yeah. It's so well documented on Twitter. I may or we may not do it justice. Quite amazing, really.
Wait, and there you go. You just passed it.
Oh, did I just pass it?
Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah. That's one of the descriptions. I mean, there's so many more. But basically, the Sensei Algod, DeGen investor, he was making some very interesting argument about how Terra is a Ponzi scheme. And he was basically saying that if there is a massive exiting, and I may misquote that, so we'll research and come back to that. But he was basically making the argument, if there's a massive exit from UST into, let's say, USDT, so people start dumping UST, then he was saying that basically the UST Luna will not be able to sustain that kind of event, and that UST will lose its peg and the whole thing will crumble. So he was talking to Doquan privately, and Doquan said, let's just speak publicly. And basically they were betting a year from now whether Luna would have the same price. I think it was around $88 when mm-hmm. they talked about it. So they said $1 million, and basically they put that million, and I'll offer screenshots, but I mean, or screenshots may have been included where the 1 million from each of those, from each Doquan and Sensei was deposited into the account of a coin, is it coin? No, they're not quoting the person who's going to be, Kobe, he's a crypto analyst who is going to be kind of the arbiter, who will hold the funds and they'll be distributed to the winner.
Yes.
So Doc Wan said like, oh yeah, if I win it, I'll give 1 million to Angel Protocol and 1 million, I'll buy alts on Terra. And basically there is another person that came in with 10 million. So somebody else, another trader, I have to look it up. This article does not quote the name, but they bet 10 million. So now the stakes have risen to like 10 million or 11 million bet basically.
So
and
a couple of just of quick notes here. First of all, I love, I think this kind of action is what attracts people to crypto, man. I mean, this is it, you know, in many ways, this kind of, you know, Wild West stuff. It's like, not only is it supremely entertaining, but it's also, yeah. I think it's also fundamentally important for the community to see stuff like this, right? But yeah. the thing that I think is really interesting about, I want to pick the argument apart just a bit, right? So, you know, this idea that Terra is a Ponzi scheme, I don't want to default to whataboutism necessarily, but like just to make a point, like there's no bigger Ponzi scheme than the US dollar, period, right? That is the biggest Ponzi scheme. And it's very, very clearly a Ponzi scheme, particularly at this stage where the dollar is decoupled. It floats within the context of other currencies. If all debts were called, like there's not enough money to cover those debts. Where this breaks apart for me. So I don't want to use whataboutism as a, I don't want to use whataboutism as a, oh, this is great. This is great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, people went crazy on Twitter.
I don't want to use whataboutism as a defense. All I'm saying is that, like, in order to get any ecosystem started, you have to invest before you can make. Like, that's just how it works. You have to spend money to make money, right? Like, if I'm building a business, I have a break even, right? Like, if I'm a cell phone company, right? Like, I have a break-even point. And so I think, just based on some of the past work that we've done, like, I mean, I think it's becoming clear where that break-even point could be for an anchor protocol, right? Now, so I'm just saying that's an example of a protocol within Terra that I think will actually have, you know, positive cash flow, you know, in, you know, the next couple of years. As far as Terra and UST being a Ponzi scheme, where this kind of falls apart for me is like what it would take for the people that are currently involved in Terra today to just throw up their hands and fly out of the ecosystem. I just don't see that happening. And I don't see it happening because, you know, I'll go back to relatively small wallets transacting relatively large amounts of money. And that's just kind of the construction of the ecosystem today. So I think that any cryptocurrency has got to reach exit velocity in order to, you know, kind of flip from investment to, you know, to business model. But, you know, and so I understand why, you know, I understand why the conversation's happening. I don't know that I agree with it. Here's the script flip though, right? What if these are just, you know, these are just plants?
I see.
Right? All right. Maybe.
Yeah. That'd be funny. But what I like is the attitude that's coming across from TFL, Doc Wan, LFG, just any of the Terra organization, leadership, founders, community. So the purchase of the $1 billion Bitcoin fund, I think that's increased by now. The gift to Bootstrap and to boost Anchor, you know, some of these bets where the proceeds will go to charity or will be charitable, will go towards, let's say, charity, or will go towards supporting the Terra ecosystem. I'm seeing this as very, very positive. I think we've seen plenty of cases where the founder just cashes out and what pulls everybody and runs away with the money. So that kind of smallish thinking just destroys a vision. And I think we're seeing the exact opposite attitude. I think that's what really inspires me and like makes me excited about Terra from Doc One and the leadership.
So let me bring up one other quick point, right? Do you know the concept of seniorage? Do you know what this is?
Yeah, does that have to do with the transaction fees?
Transaction? Seniorage comes back to the way that governments or kings or whoever that was managing a money supply would actually make money when they printed more money. And here's how it works. Let's say that you're printing coins out of silver, right? So there is the price of the silver that it takes mm-hmm. to print, like the actual cost of the silver that the coin represents, you know, that, excuse me, there's the cost of the silver that goes into the coin.
The material, right.
And then there is what the denomination is actually worth. Right. And so that delta is called seniorage, right? And so the way that it works is that, let's say you print, you know, a certain, let's say you print $1 million, right? But your material costs were only, so you printed $1 million because you're defining the denomination, but your material costs were only 500,000. Then now you have $500,000, right? And that's the way that you know the central banks of kings and queens and, you know, governments in the past, that's actually how they used money printing to make money. It's a very different situation now with sovereign debt, and it's a little bit more complicated. Nevertheless, when you think about the mechanics of Terra, it really feels like we have a seniorage, something that's kind of more of a true seniorage situation happening there, in that Luna is burned and there is UST that is minted, and then that is arbitraged, and that arbitrage goes somewhere. So my point is that, like, to the extent that Luna is natively valuable, which the people that are using Luna will determine if it has value. Right. And if they want to buy it and hold it, then it has value. It doesn't matter what, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a cryptocurrency or not. So I just think that that's an interesting philosophic kind of string to pull there, because I would argue that the mechanics of an algorithmically managed stablecoin are actually truer to the way that money used to come into existence than, you know, to the system that we see today. And I think most people that are like financial historians and kind of, you know, focus on monetary policy would say seniorage is a much healthier way of creating money.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. And of course, there's the Luna seniorage model, and then there's the seniorage definition. And you bring up a great point there. And we studied that model, right? We studied the Luna model, but we now just know it as the Luna UST relationship, that you've got this Luna's ability to capture value, then, like, as an apex asset, then that value, high quality value, is transferred into UST. So it's different from any other algorithmically managed stable coin, because it's not just printed. Right. And the management of it can be algorithmic and involve some algorithms and calculations, but the transfer of value exists in a way. I mean, and especially now with the Bitcoin. So 1 billion is what, 1/14th, 1/15th of the market cap of UST, or 1/33rd of the market cap of Luna. Imagine that billion growing. In Bitcoin, and if Bitcoin's value grows itself, you know, that's excellent. So now we've got the transfer of value that I feel like backs up the just the value of UST versus making it UST just as an algorithm or a variable that, oh, we just need to make sure it's fixed to the dollar.
Right.
It's not quite like that. There is a value behind it. And let's think of how you get the management of US dollar asset backed centralized stable coins. I mean, if there is an event where you've got too much sellers or too much buyers and you've got a shift in the value, you have to supply on the other side, whether it's demand supply or demand, right? To counterbalance it, then you have to either issue more assets or get more dollar assets, and then issue corresponding. You're trusting a centralized entity to do that, right? So at some point, that's not scalable. At some point, we're seeing USDC, USDT at 80 billion, USDC at like, what is it, 50 billion? We're seeing them struggle. Imagine doubling, tripling that market cap. Can that survive? And I think that that's where we're going to see UST shine.
Yeah, I mean, $52 billion. Say it again.
USDC is 52 billion market cap.
So,
and Tether is 80.
So if we look at, a world like, I think that oftentimes, which look, if somebody's got a critique of the ecosystem, I'm all about that. Right. Like totally cool with it. I think we should be critiquing this ecosystem as much as we possibly can. That's how the best ideas kind of rise to the top. Right. But like, think about this. You know, there was a world before, like there was a world where there were like a bunch of tribes that didn't know each other, right? And then as these tribes started meeting each other, they were like, okay, well, we want to exchange goods. So how did they do it? They bartered to begin with, right? And then what happened after that? They said, hey, here are these like cool shells that we find that are rare, you know, by the ocean. Would you take these shells? Okay, sure, maybe, right? And then it's like, we end up in this situation where this, you know, metal that people rarely find in the ground becomes like the standard of a standard that most people recognize. So all that is to say is like, truly, it is as simple as what a counterparty will accept. That's it. And if all, you know, and so, you know, if yeah. I'll give you a perfect example, or a silly example, but a perfect example. Let's say that there were 9 hot pink chickens that were born, and those are the only 9 hot pink chickens that will ever exist. And their feathers, you know, once these hot pink chickens expire, their feathers, people have these feathers. It's like scarcity drives, it must be scarce and it must be wanted. And if it's scarce and demanded, then it will be valuable, right? So like, yeah. You know, so I think people get, you know, tripped up in saying like, well, I'm all about Bitcoin or I'm all about Ethereum, but this is a Ponzi scheme. And it's like, what is a Ponzi scheme? I will tell you that the groups that are running Ponzi schemes at scale, I mean, and there are exceptions here, but I think there are few. The groups that are running Ponzi schemes at scale, you're not spending this kind of time with this level of documentation, with this number of people getting involved. I mean, that doesn't mean nothing could happen. Everything can go to zero. But I'm just saying, like, that's just not how, you know, Ponzi's come together. And I would argue that the value of Luna is like, to me, in order for UST and Luna to be a true Ponzi, one, you know, Luna would not be able to exist without UST. And I just don't think that's true. I think even Luna minus UST still would have, like for example, imagine all the protocols in Terra didn't have a UST component. Well, what would that look like? Well, it would look exactly like Ethereum and the DeFi projects in Ethereum, you know?
And Luna has its own marketplace. I think it comes down to creating an economy, right? Versus a Ponzi scheme, which can be very elaborate. And like we've seen some modern day ones that are very, very elaborate, where you've got the obfuscation of the truth, you don't have any transparency, and basically you're using people's funds to pay them back. And in all fairness, every single token, including Bitcoin or any other protocol that has launched and pays rewards in their respective token, you can say, well, they're paying back with the token. Well, as the protocol grows and effectively derives value and creates value through utility, of course you will have that turnover of the asset. But that's different from in my mind, it's different from a Ponzi scheme where you're misled in what you're investing in. In this case, we also have the blockchain where we can track every single transaction. So from that perspective, I don't see myself being misled into what kind of protocols we're investing into, or the code can be reviewed. And I was reviewing the Anchor code on liquidations recently, and you can see that the unit tests. I mean, this is as much transparency as you can ask from products. I mean, AI machine learning, where a lot of the algorithms are black boxes and you just get a predicted value.
Right.
And that's a product and people accept that because it works. But you can't look under the hood because it's proprietary. And then you don't know what's actually spitting out this value or this prediction for the given situation. And where's the transparency there? Whereas here you've got it. I mean, the blockchain itself gives you that transparency. So from the transparency perspective, not a Ponzi scheme, as you mentioned, Luna has the ability to capture value, probably like no other asset, maybe like only Bitcoin comparable to that. I think that is huge. You see a lot of tokens that, even tokens that have matured, where they struggle to capture value, the tokenomics is poor, or the underlying blockchain is not set up well, like a lot of the meme coins. The value there is so kind of ephemeral, so hard, so not tangible, that if it's sentiment. So if the sentiment turns, the value is gone. And you're seeing that with Dogecoin is now, what, 11 cents or something, and it's just dropping and dropping. And until it gets to the fundamentals, where you still have one major wallet that's 40% and some of the other major wallets that are still holding, and to them, it still has that value. But for this, the average investor chasing the green candles, that value is gone. And from that point of view, I think there is a big difference with Luna capturing amazing value with such a large percentage of Luna being staked, right? And just you can see how the asset is treated by the community collectively. So I think that's very similar, is how Bitcoin is treated by the community collectively. I think if the community, all the 46 million or 60 million, however many people hold Bitcoin, all of a sudden decide that gold is valuable and Bitcoin isn't, Bitcoin will, of course, lose its value, right? If we all collectively decide Bitcoin is not valuable, it's just ones and zeros.
Yeah.
And, gold's valuable because we can touch it and hold it in our hand. Then it will lose its value. From that perspective, Luna captures the value of that collective attitude. And if that attitude persists, is not just sentiment, right? That's the difference, I think, between meme coins and something like Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I do, but I think you're making a so your point on gold, your point on gold, the reason that that really resonates with me is not because of the traditional argument of like gold is tangible and whatever, but it's like the marketplaces that we currently interact with are so distorted and are so purposefully, like their mechanics are so purposefully obfuscated. And I'll give you a perfect example with gold. The LME, right? Which is the Precious Metals Exchange in London. This is all coming to a head, right? Owning physical gold, like, it's not going to be Bitcoin or gold. That's just not the way the world works. You need a mixed bag of assets. And if the two were exactly correlated, right, then there are people, and a perfect example of this, a family office. The goal of a family office traditionally is not to make money. The goal of a family office is not to lose money. Like, that's super important.
Wealth preservation.
Wealth preservation is a service that people pay a lot for. It's just don't lose it. So when you look at something like gold, even though gold hasn't been behaving as we would expect gold to behave in a regime where interest rates look like they're going to be tightening, you know, we're in a period of inflation, you know, there's turmoil around the world. Even though it hasn't been behaving like that, it still has a place in like the in the value stack. But the reason that I made the comment about the LME, dude, there is a very, very interesting, there have been very interesting observations around the way that the LME actually works. And when you dig down in and you see like the mechanics, it sure as shit looks like the same gold is sold multiple times and represented by multiple ETFs. So all that is to say is that, like, you know, I don't know that we even have a really good idea as to like what the gold market really looks like in terms of, you know, like from a stock to flow kind of perspective, because we don't know, you know, we have a sense of what might be in the ground. We have a sense as to like what, you know, producers produce, but it's not like that there's like a ticker that is recognized globally that counts every single ounce of gold that goes through. Oftentimes
you're taking a public blockchain, right?
Or a public blockchain that's verifying, you know, what's happening here. And so, you know, I mean, I heard this comment the other day. I was mentioning this about Luke Grauman and situation with Russia.
Trees.
Yeah. And the situation with Russia. And it's like, you know, now with the sanctions on Russia, it looks like Russia is really looking for, you know, a different unit of exchange for oil other than the dollar, right? So they want to kind of delaminate from the petrodollar. So as they're doing this, they're looking at taking rubles, right? They're looking at taking yuan. But, you know, another potential here is because Russia over the past, I guess, like 7-8 years, they've been upping, the purchases. Their central bank has been acquiring physical gold aggressively. So has the Bank of Japan. So have select banks throughout the European Union. So we could imagine a world where, not saying this is going to happen, but it's just it's a comment that I heard the other day from Luke Grauman that I want to echo here. It is feasible. We could imagine a world where, you know, a gold-backed asset goes onto a blockchain because we want to verify that gold actually exists, right? Now, granted, you might be taking Russia's word for it. That might be another conversation. But then that unit of exchange would then become the other pole in a multi-polar trade environment, right? And so that is... Exactly. So
that was, what you're referring to as well in our offline conversation.
Yeah.
You're starting to see the, move away from the petrodollar.
So I think that, you know, the new regime, the new monetary regime globally, man, I mean, I hope people start thinking about it sooner than later, because when you start talking to people about what money actually is, it really is startling, I think, to a lot of people that have never thought about it, right? But what money is, like, at its core, right? You know, sure, we have tenets of, characteristics of money. It's portable, it's modular, it's extensible, right? We have these, you know, characteristics of moneyness. But the truth of what money is if you recognize it and I recognize it and you are willing to trade with it, that is money.
Yeah.
Now, scalable money must have those characteristics, right? But truthfully, it is a trust-based instrument, right? And which brings us full circle. it sure as hell seems like a orchestration layer that requires no that can orchestrate behavior with something with that token that sure as shit feels like money, has the characteristics of money, across people that don't need to know each other or trust each other. That starts to sound like a pretty damn good evolution of money. So, you know, all this is to say is like, you know, I know we got here through the bet, but you know, it's just there's the silliness of the bet, and then there's a kind of like the sincerity of like, well, what are these systems at their core? And when you start really looking at like blockchain systems at their absolute core, the reason that Terra is so interesting is because it checks a lot of those boxes that other ecosystems do not.
Yeah. And actually your point that you made offline, I may have cut you off just now, was that if Russia picks gold or Bitcoin, that's going to skyrocket the value of that asset because Russia has such a large part of the, I think it was 30% of the supply of oil for the world. And I think that as an asset, as a way of bestowing value on or capturing value, whatever vehicle they pick, yuan, gold, Bitcoin, ruble, right? That's not the US dollar. I think it will make that currency very in high demand and very valuable.
Yeah, well, and then there,
that was a great point.
But here's the other interesting part about it. If they choose, like, and I don't think this is going to happen, but if they did say, we're going to settle oil trades in Bitcoin would be bigger than anybody could have ever imagined, faster than anybody could have ever imagined. And if they said, well, we're going to do gold backed on a blockchain, again, I don't think these two things are going to happen, but if they did, Bitcoin still rips, right? If they say, no, we're just going to take gold, I believe Bitcoin still rips for a wide variety of reasons. I think gold does really well, but I think it's still spelling out that use case of like, you know, not my keys, you know, not my coins, right? Which we saw at scale with the US reserves basically being exploded. Like Russia basically had a bunch of US dollar reserves, and the United States government said, we're just not going to honor that. So, you know, it's super crazy. And then the last part here is, even if they go with the yuan or the ruble, basically you end up in a situation where the dollar gets called into question in some way. And I think even in a high inflation environment, I think it's still bullish for crypto. So, you know, there are not a lot of
great points.
I think the only thing we've got to watch right now. So I think there almost any scenario is like mildly to very bullish for crypto. The only one that I think could be damaging in the short term is to the extent that, and I've said this in the past, I don't know that I think that it really trades like this now, we'll see. To the extent that there are big traders trading Bitcoin like a global risk asset, if that's the assumption, then it's high beta, that is true. And if the market gets shook for whatever reason, then Bitcoin is gonna dip, but I think it's gonna bounce back faster than anything else because of the aforementioned, options in terms of how the globe proceeds with monetary policy.
Great points. I just wanted to touch on one of the other reasons why, and I'm just gonna pause this video. One of the other reasons why. We saw a dip in Bitcoin was this EU attempt to basically reject the proof of work is a way of generating value. So basically banning Bitcoin specifically as the major proof of work cryptocurrency. And because it's if you have proof of work, you need to maintain some sort of, basically it was an ESG argument. And of course it did not pass. It wasn't even voted to be voted on. But these are attempts to basically curb Bitcoin, curb the adoption of Bitcoin or crypto in general, right? And specifically the proof of work Again, that was thought that we have gone through so many cycles of, is it energy, you know, friendly and, you know, all of that. We've seen it here domestically in the US. We've seen it internationally. This was just another attempt. And it did bring the Bitcoin price, I think, from 40 to 38. I think, okay, we just dropped because on that. Nothing happened, just a bunch of FUD. Everybody agrees. Kevin O'Leary agrees.
But Georgi, the thing that's so crazy about this is every time something like this happens, it's a more bullish case for Bitcoin, right? Like yeah. when Joe Biden, like, you know, says, hey, look over here, Ukraine. And then all of a sudden there's an executive, you know, order on like putting together all these cryptocurrency docs, or, you know, putting together, you know, signing a executive order to do a deep dive into cryptocurrency. I mean, I think if we believe that like, you know, I guess let's put it like this, money in today's society, right? It is the way a government would use capital is today I'm saying in 2022, they would weaponize money. That's what's happening, right? So if this is an arms race, my bet is with the people that are in the wild developing this thing faster than anyone in the government could possibly imagine. So as they say, okay, well, we're gonna, you know, I think it's like all like posturing and bullshit when they're like, okay, well, we're going to do these reports and we're going to, no. That's as fast as you can move. That's because the government is designed to move at a glacial pace, right? Especially right. in the United yeah. States, right? It's the government yeah, is yeah. designed for gridlock. That's how it's set up. And it's set up that way so that not any party can come in and just completely change everything and pair off the ability for the counterparty to change anything back. So all that is to say is, we're now in this ecosystem where it's like governments, you know, you've got Trudeau and the truckers, you've got, you know, you've got the United States doing, and I, by the way, this is no comment on like the morality around, you know, the trucker protest. I'm not suggesting I agree or disagree with that. I'm not suggesting I agree or disagree with, you know, the Russian conflict. I'm saying, you know, evaporate the morality out of it for a second. And this, the tale that's being told again and again and again and again, you don't own your money. You do yeah, not that's own right. your money.
Even crypto on centralized exchanges that, you know, Russian oligarchs have KYC'd in, that was seized, blocked, wallets were blocked, seized, assets were seized. So it shows you, I mean, DEXs.
No due process. And, no due yeah, process. Yeah, just seized.
Yeah. Yeah. And that basically is such a reminder. And I have a couple of contacts that also fell victims to scams on centralized exchanges overseas, where basically, I mean, even with Coinbase, we basically share custody of our wallets on Coinbase. You don't have a seed phrase.
That's exactly right.
Right. So Coinbase can seize your wallet, seize your funds if the government orders them to, or like if they decide to. And that's the difference between that and Terra, blockchains like Terra and DEXs. And I think, that is where you are your own custodian, right? Except our wallets obviously live on the blockchain, validators host them. Now, that's the closest you get to basically MetaMask, Coinbase, and then having a physical.
But even I saw screenshots this week that even MetaMask was starting to require some KYC in certain examples, right? So right, like,
yep.
And so I would say that just as a, you know, my personal opinion is that people need to be looking at running a node. They need to be looking at, running a node in Bitcoin is very inexpensive. We're not talking about mining. We're talking about running a node. It's very inexpensive and it enables you to take transactions directly through that node. So like that is a way to start thinking about, you know, when you're on Coinbase or Gemini, like, let's be clear, this is a hybrid system. You are not out of traditional finance and you are not fully in to a distributed system. It's a hybrid system. And most people need that hybrid system because they don't want to say, okay, well, you're saying if I lose these 21 words, if I forget them, if I misplace them, if I have a house fire or whatever, my entire, you know, net worth is gone. Some people aren't ready for that, and that's fine. There, those products exist. But what you give up when you share a custodial wallet like that, you get all you have is the upside potential of these assets in a bank. Like, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
And so they can call themselves crypto exchanges all they want. It's Chase Bank with another coat of paint.
That's great. Yeah. That's exactly right. And they're useful. They have their functionality.
That's exactly right.
I need them. I need them to be able to get from TradFi into crypto and back, and to DeFi and to TradFi. But you're absolutely right. And, it's just so, first, that becomes so apparent in all of these use cases that you mentioned. And also, furthermore, the need for accessing funds that we talked about, the Ukrainians and Russians, both peoples need that right now in this conflict. Banks are just not functioning. So that's where the larger crypto network can offer that. And it's just such a great bullish case for crypto.
Yeah, it really is.
Even though the conflict is awful, but yeah, it is a huge bullish case for how do you assert your freedom and financial freedom in such times?
Yeah, this is completely true. So anyway, awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Great conversation.
Yeah. I really, really appreciate it. I want to remind everybody, come see us at TTLG_crew on Twitter. We've got some other links to some of our other socials on there as well. Don't forget, you can find us on Apple Podcasts. And are we on Spotify as well? I think we are.
Spotify, Instagram, and YouTube. And Medium.
That's right. So come see us, hit the subscribe button, give us some feedback, and we will see you next time. Georgi, thank you for your time, man.
Thanks, Joseph.